Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where advice starts with your best interests in mind, helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, Jim Stackpool from Certainty Advice Group with another podcast in the Certainty series, where we aim to help as many Australians as possible access valuable financial advice truly in their best interests without any conflict or bias in any way whatsoever. Today I want to run a podcast series called Asking the Right Questions of Your Financial Advisor, because it seems in some ways financial services has not been servicing Australians as much as potentially being self-serving. The banks are exiting financial advice, the big financial life companies and others who've been pertaining themselves to be providing advice in some ways are getting out because they can't make any money out of providing products, not so much advice. But with every working Australian being an investor of some sort because of their superannuation balances that are growing, and with more and more products becoming available like Afterpay and credit facilities, and we're using cash less and cards more, and with booming number of us potentially reaching retirement, including me, looking to protect our lifestyles, but at a time when interest rates have never been tinier, you know, what are the questions we should be asking for advisors? Of our advisors. So I'm lucky to have Paul Birch, owner principal with Pacific Wealth here in Manly, New South Wales, a Certainty advisor down here by the beach, PAC Wealth, pacwealth.com.au, who are acting as a principal advisor for a wide variety of individuals and couples and businesses in a local area on the beaches and in fact all over Australia. But Paul is remunerated, like all Certainty advisors, purely upon the quality of the advice in flat dollar terms. So I asked Paul these questions about what are the questions to ask, what are the right questions people should be asking of their advisor. But listen particularly for, and Paul talks about the waning, reducing dominance of financial products, and so the new era, and listen to what his new era is after the financial product era we've had for the last 20 or 30 years. Also Paul's views about, he talks about paths rather than products and the importance of discussing paths in your financial life. And thirdly, interesting comments he makes about why the banks, in his view, were never really in the provision of advice. But I started by asking, what are those questions Australians should be asking if they and when they visit an advisor?
Well, Jim, I'm not sure that they're asking the right questions. They're probably just asking the questions that they've always been asking and that they've been trained to ask coming out of a product environment. Is this the right super fund that I'm in? Should I roll over to this fund? Is an industry fund better for me? I've read The Barefoot Investor. Should my income protection be inside super? So I think that they're the questions that they're asking, but I don't necessarily agree that they're the right questions they should be asking in this environment.
And so you talk about right questions, and obviously they're the common questions. And in some ways, we're chatting just before we started this podcast today about the era. We have certainly been through the last 20 or even more years a very strong era of financial advice. It's been very, very strongly influenced by product manufacturers. And so those questions about this super fund over that one, this asset allocation over that one, the fees of this industry fund compared to a retail fund, they're all very product orientated questions. Do you see a new era forming, and what sort of questions do they need to ask in the new era of advice?
Oh, definitely. And look, I think that the product era is nearly over. You know, a better question would be, is this the best possible path that I'm on to achieve those goals and aspirations that I want to achieve?
So you're saying people should be on paths rather than in products?
Well, a product is relevant when it's required, but a product without a plan or a path towards what they're hoping to achieve is useless, really. A product for the sake of a product doesn't achieve anything. Mm-hmm. You know, are they on the best possible path to achieve those things that are important to them and that they want to achieve? And that path and strategy and advice may not even involve being invested in a product.
And so the old world of advice, the old more product era of advice that we're coming out of, from what you're saying before, has obviously had product all through it, systemically in some ways. But you're suggesting that the new era of advice, which is more path-based, what is the path people should be on and the best path for them, considering all the different things in their lives and what they hope to achieve and the products that are available, that might not even have a product in place. It might simply be help coaching people through or are you suggesting it might be coaching people through better savings budgets or facing a financial decision with a significant other that hasn't been faced before, that if it's not faced, then longer term, you know, financial disaster or otherwise might occur. You're talking more about the behavioural stuff there?
Exactly. I mean, these are the complexities that, you know, a lot of couples face. One person may have more of a say in how the financial life of a couple is managed, and one may be more of a spendthrift, and one may be more inclined to save, which can cause conflict in a relationship. So, yeah, certainly for the first 6 or 12 months, there might not be any product discussed at all, and it's really just addressing what are your behaviour patterns in managing money, what are the complexities around that, and how do we get you both on the same page, working towards a common path that you're both looking to achieve.
So just on that, Paul, digging a bit deeper, are you suggesting, in fact, that if you're talking to a couple in this example you just used, that there could be two paths, you know, one for, but based upon the individual behaviours of each member of the couple that tries to bring them and align them to a common path? Is that what you're saying?
Well, ideally, you know, if it's a relationship that they want to have work out, and they both want to be on the same page and working towards the same goals, then there may be some compromise that they need to make, and that they slightly adjust each of their paths to be more in sync with each other. But at the end of the day, if he wants to go skiing and she wants to go surfing, and the costs involved are different for that, then they may well need two very different paths.
So this new era of advice provided by advisors like yourself could be coaching people, as you're speaking there, on this compromise that may need to make, not because of product selection, simply because of behaviours that people have towards whether they spend too much or don't spend enough, or whether, in fact, one has aspirations for holidays at the beach and another has aspirations for holidays overseas.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's, you know, why our fitness industry is so successful, because people know that they need to exercise and they need to eat better and do all those things, but they don't. They hire, you know, personal trainers and coaches to make them go out and do the things that they know they should be doing.
Is this why the banks and large financial institutions, you know, are exiting the whole financial advice space? You know, they've had so much negative press since the Royal Commission and a lot of other factors, not simply due the misconduct of their some of their wealth divisions, that those banks and institutions, large institutions, never had the skills to talk about these compromising type, or where you're coaching people on the compromises required as compared to the products required. Is that why the banks are leaving?
No, definitely. I mean, I think that the advice arms of the banks were purely there to deliver a product and to facilitate, you know, people buying more and more of that product. So they were promising advice, but what they were doing was just selling a product for clients, not looking at the complexities that were facing the clients.
So how do they get away with calling them an advice arm? You know, it sounds like they're more a product recommendation distribution arm.
Well, that's a good question, and it certainly looks like they're not really getting away with it too much anymore. As a matter of fact, they're simply getting out of the business, financial advice business, because they've realised that they really don't understand it and how to do it well.
Because going back to your first point, that's reflective in the questions clients are asking when they come in to see an advisor. They're all more got the product bias to their questions about the cheapest industry fund or industry versus retail fund, or what's the insurance I need for this part of my life, or the aged care processes for my parents. There are a lot of product questions in there as compared to the questions you're suggesting, which is more the direction I want to go in my financial life, the path I need to take, and helping me with the compromises that I need to take simply because there are others involved in that decision.
Exactly. Look, it's like an analogy is it's looking to buy the fastest car without knowing where you're going to go to. You want to know where you're going and whether or not you then need a fast car to get you there. You know, where a slow car may do the trick just as well and save you half the money.
Mm-hmm. And so how does someone who's coming in to see an advisor know whether they're dealing with someone who's more interested in selling you the fastest car as compared to what are the telltale signs they can use as compared to trying to find someone who will simply ensure they're on the best possible path?
Well, they're asking questions to get a better understanding of what the bigger picture is for those clients, what's important to them, what are the complexities, why haven't they achieved the goals that they've been wanting to achieve, what's standing in their way, what are the behavioural problems perhaps that they've had, even from childhood, in regards to managing money that are stopping them from saving or investing or getting to where they want to be. Looking at the whole picture rather than just looking at, which fund their superannuation is invested in.
I can imagine a lot of Australians or people listening to this now might be a bit, reticent with all the bad press that's been around the whole advice industry now for a good 18 months, 2 years, and maybe even before that, to sort of relax into those sort of bigger, broader conversations about where they want to go and the complexities they face and the different paths they and their other loved ones may be on. How does someone relax into these conversations knowing they're talking to someone that is going to take their best interests at heart without any product bias or platform bias or solution bias whatsoever? How do they do that?
Look, I think, there's no doubt that initially a lot of clients are uncomfortable with some of these questions at the start because they're not questions that they are expecting. They are expecting questions along the lines of, how much do you have in superannuation and what's your income and when do you want to retire? So they weren't expecting questions about what is it that, you're aspiring to achieve? What are the complexities that are stopping you from achieving that goal? So I think once they become engaged in that conversation, they start to realise that there's a lot more value in those conversations than in simply looking at what they have and what they earn.
And so this is obviously too, I'm taking it, that this isn't something just one member of a couple goes and talks about. You're talking about the unique aspirations of each member or the unique complexities and the unique paths of each member of the couple, and therefore they're both coming in to talk about this stuff, which I would probably suggest they haven't had that type of conversation with accountants or financial advisors in the past. And even getting both of them to a meeting for this sort of conversation may be very, very different experience that anyone's experienced to date. Is that true?
Oh, definitely. So we don't like to see clients unless they are, if they are in a relationship, we don't like to see them unless they're together. And quite often, not only are these conversations that they haven't had with other professionals in the past, but they're quite often conversations that they rarely have with each other. It's an experience for a couple in a relationship to better understand what the other person is hoping to achieve, what their hopes, desires, and goals are.
So is it just on that point you say there, they've really had it with each other, meeting an advisor that's asking these sort of questions to get answers that they've really had with each other, that sounds quite difficult.
Look, it can be, but it can also be very enlightening. Quite often you'll get clients say, look, that was fantastic. I didn't realise that XYZ was so important to her or that, achieving this was so important to him. And thank you for bringing that out because now I better understand why, he works so hard or why she puts such a focus on helping the kids with schoolwork or whatever the case may be.
Okay. Because I think on the other side of it, as a consequence of the product era I think we've had for the last 20 or 30 years, you've seen a huge build-up of those that are running into things like self-managed super funds, for instance, almost becoming their own owner-builder, to use that analogy, of their own financial destiny to sort of control, pick the stocks and time the market and all that sort of stuff. But what you're suggesting is, in fact, it'd be very hard for an owner-builder to have that level of objectivity to properly determine the best path of sometimes their spouse or their other significant other. It almost seems direct opposite. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, definitely. Look, I mean, I care very much about my clients, but I'm not emotionally involved in their finances the way they are. And when you take out that emotion, you are able to help them make more objective decisions and help them see which is, probably the better decision to be making without emotion or the influence of media or friends, influencing that decision that you're about to make. And when you're an owner builder or a DIY investor, it's very hard to take that aspect out of your decision making process.
And so again, just coming to this, the questions that anyone listening to this probably needs to be aware of or have on hand to ask or whatever that might be, is more around those issues of, I guess, payment. Is that fair to say that they need to know that the person they're listening to and asking these broad questions is only getting paid by the client, not by anybody else? Is that fair to say?
Oh, exactly. So that's a great question that clients can ask their advisor is, you know, how are you paid? How do you get remunerated? Are you remunerated through commissions or by a product, or is there a very clear, straightforward agreement between ourselves where the fees are transparent and it's clear to see what you're paying for and the value that you're receiving in return for those fees?
So do you see, if you're taking clients down a path, you've obviously got a broader set of services than simply I'm an investment advisor or I'm a cash flow specialist. And so do you see more and more advisors like yourself who offer a convergence of lots of different services as being essential to help people down their unique paths?
I think, trying to be an expert in every field is in the past. That's the old way of doing things, because you soon realise that you just can't be an expert in every field. But knowing when and who to turn to for that expertise when clients need it, and being the project manager for that advice or for that strategy or for that path that they're on is more important. And being able to coordinate that and knowing the clients better than anyone else to make sure that, you know, they're getting the best possible advice for the outcomes that they're looking for.
And so that's a huge term. So now you're coming from a different perspective that probably most people listening to this haven't thought through, in that they're thinking more, they're dealing with a project manager of their financial life as compared to being considered a individual financial advisor. And so the questions are more of a project management basis rather than simply as a, you know, is this the best or cheapest industry fund for me?
Exactly. So, you know, coaching them to overcome the complexities and the behavioural issues that they're facing in their life, managing that side of it as well as knowing when to outsource to a solicitor or an investment advisor or an insurance specialist when their circumstances require that they need that advice as well.
So in essence, the questions are around this sense of being on a path from a project manager that is tailoring their approach and questions individually for a couple to ensure they're on a path, not necessarily in a product, and they're getting paid only by, well, the advisor's getting paid only by the client, I should say. No other conflict from any other payment mechanism at all.
That's correct. And if you're paying your advisor for a service and you're paying him directly and you know that he's not receiving any other payments or any other conflicts, real or perceived, then it's a transparent relationship that you have, and it's a relationship that's ethical and free from any other perceived conflicts, so that you know that your advisor's not worrying about whether or not you stay invested in a managed fund or whether or not you use XYZ fund manager or whether or not you even invest at all. Your advisor's simply looking out for your best interests.
So there you have it. Paul Birch from Pacific Wealth, PacWealth, pacwealth.com.au, here on the glorious northern beaches in Sydney. What were your takeaways? Mine, I had three. Paul's points that paths, in fact, are more important, and questions around the path, the best possible path we should be on, not so much the products in, because Paul's making a number of references that sometimes we don't need products. Sometimes we just need to be guided through the challenges we face in our lives, the complexities he talked about, to reach those things we want to achieve in our lives and give in our lives on a path that may not even require a product. So that's a different twist altogether from most of the questions we're asking as we walk in today, searching for the best sort of product. Second point is about the answers to the possible path need to be given without any product bias whatsoever. And in fact, not even bias to what the couple may want, but the individuals within the couple. So Paul made a very good point that we all have unique aspirations and unique complexities that need to be navigated around and respected, not simply just doing whatever one person in the couple may aspire to do or one member of a couple may have difficulty with. Really interesting points that the questions should be pointed individually, not just collectively, and managing the behaviours correspondingly. And also ask questions about how people are paid without any bias in the solution that may in any way influence the advisor. because we can't have any influence whatsoever if we're looking for true advice in our best interests without bias. So the payments are made in flat dollar terms, for instance, not in percentages, and they're only engaged at a year at a time. So I hope that's been helpful for you, listening to help you understand what are the questions you should be asking of your advisor. Paul is a certainty advisor, unconflicted in his approach, adhering to Australia's highest and only, in fact, professional standard of advice that's registered with the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission and IP Australia, certainty advice. So thank you, Paul, principal of Pacific Wealth, a great advisory firm here in Manly, and changing the perception client by client and the questions that are being asked about what truly is financial advice. I'd love to get your feedback on this. Thank you for listening. Jim Stackpole from Certainty Advice Group signing off. Cheers for now.
Thanks for listening to the Certainty Advice Podcast with Jim Stackpole. To access all the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, please head on over to seekingcertainty.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. Seekingcertainty.com.